September 11th is a day that we all remember, even 25 years later.
We will read all these names. We will linger over them and learn their stories.
The heroes who stepped up remind us of America's strength every single day.
May he bless the souls of the departed, and may he always guide our country. God bless America.
Well, good morning. It is 7:14. It is the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy here. And yes, if you have noticed, we've been having some definitely some power issues. Bob, are we connected here from where you are at the moment?
It appears to be.
Oh, yeah.
We're connected telephonically.
Yeah, I like that.
We could do better. You know what this reminds me of, Greg?
What's that?
Can you imagine what the 9/11 folks were going through responding to the emergencies, and they had a lot of communication failures. They were overloaded, remember, and they couldn't communicate from department to, you know, law enforcement to fire rescue, etc. So I mean, communications is always key, and we still have challenges to this day, obviously.
Well, yeah, and then you stop and think about people that around the world, literally, because, you know, people had friends and family that were traveling, and business people that, you know, were within companies that were working in the World Trade Center towers, and they're all trying to call at the same time, and nobody's getting through because of the overload.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So here we are 25 years later on the sad anniversary of September 11, 2001. It does seem hard to believe for many of us who've been around for a while that 25 years has come and gone, what appears to be so quickly, yet when we see any kind of footage from that time period, it brings us right back to ground zero.
Oh, absolutely. It just the retrospect, and yet 25 years, long time, but yet it does feel like yesterday. And you and I, obviously, like most people, remember exactly where we were.
And there's so many young people that are growing up that either weren't born yet or were of a very young age. So they grew up in a post-9/11 era. The way you're dealt with at the airport is nothing different for them and for that generation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely changed. But yeah, speaking of where we were, I remember I was visiting the hospital. My wife then was getting... she had just had some surgery on her ankle, and she was getting an examination. And we knew the orthopedic surgeon, the doctor. He was a friend of ours. I actually played softball with him, and Dr. Nowicki. And he came in while we're actually in the examining room, and he goes, "Did you hear a plane hit the World Trade Center?" I'm like, "No." And I thought about it right away. You know, I wonder what the radio station's doing. But I didn't. There was no sense of panic or anything else, because I thought, oh, it's a Cessna, mm-hmm. Probably a medical emergency. The guy passed out behind the controls and accidentally,
right.
Hit the World Trade Center. And then once you got some live footage going, you go, ooh, that looks kind of nasty. And then right before we were leaving, he came back in again. He said, oh, another plane just hit.
Yeah.
And that's when I think myself and everybody else who was aware of what was going on knew this was something completely different.
Yeah, we had the same scenario. I was on the air in St. Louis at the time, and our news person was in a different room. But I could hear her through a speaker, to the side, and that's what she said. A plane just hit the World Trade Center. And we, like so many people that just heard it, assumed that, little plane, little Cessna, that kind of thing. And then she came back and told us that it was a jet. And we're like, okay, that changes everything. And, of course, then, by then the news was breaking and was going around the world and making the network news. I remember it was Regis. They were on live doing the show.
That's right.
And you remember that whole thing of where they, again, like everybody else, they were just getting information and then realized what was going on. And, of course, it changed everything.
And I had not been doing talk radio that for very long at all. I'd made the transition from the rock station in Orlando, same company, over to WDBO on the talk side. And so you know, I'm still, getting my bearings, so to speak.
Sure.
And so, you know, immediately I'm called into work. And I remember, you know, we went live with Peter Jennings as we carried ABC News then. Mm-hmm. And so that dates this whole equation in another way with Peter Jennings on the air.
Right.
And, of course, he, you know, was one of the masters and handled, you know, things just appropriately. And then as soon as we could, you know, go live with any different information, we started to do that. And things obviously were still unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Pentagon and all that followed. It was, it's a day that we're never going to forget, and we never should.
No, and I think that's probably what's bothering a lot of Americans, is how many they feel like did. But again, when you do the math on this, so someone who's in their 30s was just a kid and maybe didn't fully understand what was going on, who was behind it. There's still controversy about that. And so as time goes on and as people age and get older, and I don't mean old, I'm talking about young and middle-aged Americans, they don't remember. It might as well be the Vietnam War for them.
And wasn't there really, there was a time when I think there was a lot of agreement that we weren't going to continue to show the video on the air.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, if that was just sort of a, you know, an unwritten kind of agreement that we weren't going to do that. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure if that was the best way to handle it. I get the PTSD angle of it, re-traumatizing people, but you don't also want to forget or have that thing sort of go away or have that whole scenario be unfamiliar to younger Americans.
There's that side of the coin, but kind of like when you say going back to that agreement, does it give the people who are behind it encouragement, as in, look what we did? Although we moved on, built the Freedom Tower. I was in New York City when that was being built. It was probably about 2/3 done at that point in time. So, yeah, you can look at it from both sides, I think.
Yeah, I get it. That, look, terrorists do these major type of events wanting clearly major coverage. They want to be able to show and to frighten, you know, in this case, the American people, the American government. But it really had the opposite effect because nothing since then, for 25 years, has brought Americans together any tighter, any closer than what 9/11 did, both just across political aisles and also from a spiritual standpoint. Churches literally were full. So you had politicians getting along, people praying for guidance. So the terrorists definitely didn't win.
No, you're absolutely right. I think, and you kind of touched on it, I think one of the most interesting things, and it's a little irritating, I think, we let bad people determine our daily life. We let criminals determine our daily life by the new things we put into place. You talk about flying, and you know, then the guy did the thing with the shoes, and we've got the thing with the liquids, and it's like, I know you have to take precautions. I kind of just hate that we have to feel reactionary every time one person does something bad.
Yeah, I get that. And look, maybe part of it could be my previous martial arts training. Mm-hmm. And I was training at a pretty high level even when 9/11 had happened. So, you know, and a fan of Bruce Lee as well. And how does this all work together? Well, you don't ever want to reach a state of paranoia, looking over your shoulder. We cannot live in freedom and live our lives and the American dream doing that.
Right.
However, we can't just go away walking blindly or numbly into the future. Mm-hmm. We have to pay attention. And, you know, I have the quick phrase that I always told my kids, you know, head on a swivel.
Right.
And that's, you know, Bruce Lee used to pretend like there's a bad guy around the corner.
Uh-huh.
And so he would gain that mindset, but not with a sense of paranoia, a sense of kind of always be prepared and know that the unexpected can occur at any time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the big difference. You know, you talk about it being the thing that brought America together, and nothing else, like you said, in the last quarter century has done that. And then you look how far we are now in America, where any little thing, and we're, you know, the land of the easily offended, as you refer to it as, and that's kind of where we are right now. But it was interesting in how I watched it change even in the years after. So, you know, we did the memorial services the next year or two that were there, and they had, you know, a Protestant pastor. You had, you know, those from the Jewish faith. You had those from all different faiths. And it wasn't but just a few years after that, I remember, and I'm going blank on who the pastor was at the time, they actually gave him guidelines. And interestingly enough, one of them was, you can't mention Jesus. It's like it started to turn even a little bit just 2 or 3 years after. And that sentiment was creeping back in. You could, you know, you could say a generic, you know, small g God, but you couldn't mention Jesus. And I thought, wow, that is, it's amazing how quickly that little thing, it's a big thing to some of us, but that started to change.
Yeah, because he's such an offensive character.
Well, it offends you if it's something that you don't believe, or not even don't believe, because we've had that conversation with listeners, and it's not even that it's a don't believe. It, like, it somehow is offensive if you mention. But the fact that it changed that quickly in American culture, in how whoever was putting on that program had changed their mind. Ironically, I was just watching while we were away. By the way, maybe we should back up. We have obviously been off the air. All the equipment is not working yet. So what you're hearing is me and Bob, but a lot of things that you normally would hear at this time are not going to work. We will be trying to break for national news at top and bottom of the hour, but just bear with us. Literally, there's an engineer running around the building right now trying to fix things. So we do appreciate your patience. But Bob, one thing that I was watching this morning was when President Bush went out to throw the first pitch. Do you remember that video and that experience of the game in New York?
Absolutely. The crowd could not have been more electric.
Yeah.
It didn't matter whether you voted for that man or not. We were 100% together. We were behind him. He was leading us through one of the most terrible things to ever happen to our nation. And that was kind of the, you know, exclamation point of America is coming back and coming back strong. It still gives me chills to think about that moment.
Yeah, it was interesting. It's like I think it was Jeter said, hey, do it right or they'll boo you, you know, or, you know. And literally, he walked out there. You could tell that had to be a scary moment in a sense, if you know what I mean. But, you know, he was very well protected.
Well, and he had that look of seriousness on his face. It wasn't fear. It was determination, but there was a sense of sadness, but also a sense of we're all looking forward together. And yeah, there was the weight of the world was on this guy's shoulders, and he's got to go out there and throw a baseball. And that was probably one pitch that meant more to the world than anyone I've ever seen before.
It was a crazy moment. It was an exciting moment. You could tell, who knows what kind of vest he had under that jacket, but that had to be an exciting moment, a scary moment, because, again, we don't know the risks. Now, was security really tight, you know, at the field that night? Absolutely. But, again, you did not know what could happen, and so it was a risk on everybody's part. You know, you had that going on. You had Saturday Night Live when they decide, okay, we've got to go out there and be funny and help heal. I mean, there were so many cultural things because we'd never dealt with that in this modern, at that point, modern social media entertainment industry, that you had to decide how do you move forward.
Well, you didn't know either. Was this a one-day, one-time event with one cell? Or was this going to be coming in waves?
Yeah,
what
right.
other ways are we going to be attacked? Anywhere where large crowds were, were very, very suspect. I remember, you know, like when the Gators, you know, finally came back to playing, the police presence and was incredible, which it generally is to this day.
Yeah.
But I think that's when it really... That's when they took that next giant step to really ratchet things up from that level.
Yeah. Well, and it, just from a standpoint of moving forward, I'll do the opposite looking back. When you talk about the risk of things happening, because remember, the towers coming down was not the first event. It was, what, about the third of their planning their attacks, the earlier tower attack, the coal? I mean, you had multiple things that had happened over the years there.
Yeah, yeah, we had warning. We knew, if you want to get into the political nomenclature of it, then you have to consider there was a separation between domestically what you could collect from information and and also internationally. So there was this what they called the wall of separation between the FBI and the CIA, to make an easy example out of it.
Yeah.
And we found out that that was actually a weakness designed to protect Americans and our privacy, but ineffectual against this kind of an enemy at that time.
Yeah. Well, and then obviously you were talking earlier about the communication issues that happened on that date. That's where a lot of things started changing, because they were trying to get multiple agencies on common frequencies. That's when even watching your television changed, because they were changing so many things the FCC was having to do to consolidate those things, get some things off of those frequencies. And that's why a lot of those things happened, was based on what happened on 9/11.
Oh, and the years post 9/11, the tremendous amount of money that was spent just in that area alone of changing communications for everything, like you said, broadcast channels to all of your public safety channels, law enforcement, fire rescue, in pretty much every community. So just from that standpoint alone, what an undertaking that was, both in time and energy and, of course, in cost.
Yeah. Hey, listen, because things are coming together very quickly here from an engineering standpoint, we're going to take a really quick break and join Network News, and then hopefully, at least at some level, come back and join with things a little more normal. I hope.
Yeah, sounds good.
A free American people will not be intimidated, nor will we be defeated.
We will not tire, we will not falter, and we will not fail.
We need to remember those heroes on that day, September 11th, and those that protect our freedom today.
We're coming up on 7:38. It is the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy in with Bob Rose. And yes, as we are kind of working through our morning, we are continuing to take care of some technical issues. A lot of folks know, Bob, that there was actually a power outage last night, and that affected a lot of equipment. And with our digital world, sometimes it takes things a little longer to get those hamsters rolling and get it all warmed up.
Well, we're working on less than ideal conditions, but how appropriate, really, and trying to think of just what the, you know, the first responders were dealing with. I mean, their heads had to be spinning, and they were having communication issues, and phone lines were tied up. There was too much traffic on the cell towers, and all those things that, you know, have been really been worked on, rectified, and made us better since then. But, you know, you just got to push through it. And, of course, that's what we're doing here. And, you know, it's been 25 years.
Wow.
And one of the things that, you know, is irritating, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, I mean, he's the self-proclaimed architect of this terrorist act. And, you know, he remains behind bars at the U.S. Naval Base in Guantanamo 25 years later. Talk about a lack of justice for the families that lost loved ones during that awful event. That has got to be a source of irritation for a lot.
Well, you know, and that's one thing that just, even at the local level, you know, we'll hear a story on our local news about, you know, well, a death sentence was carried out last night. And then we hear the story of, you know, the person that they killed in 1985. And it's like, I know you don't want to rush to judgment in a lot of those cases, because technology has come a long way. DNA has changed, you know, the results of what we thought something was. But at some point, in a case like that, it's like, really, what's the holdup? What's the problem here?
Yeah, there's a sense of frustration there. And, you know, yeah, you talk about, you know, giving people a chance to defend themselves and going through the appeals process. I mean, 25 years for this act that I know we have a ton of information that implicates this guy and at least four others.
Oh, yeah.
In this event. Hey, by the way, you know, there are things going on to commemorate 9/11. Of course, you know, Ground Zero, that is going to be a huge event. But like Embry-Riddle, the ROTC students up the road, Daytona area,
yeah,
they're honoring 9/11 responders with a memorial stair climb, and they've done this before. So they will climb what essentially would be, you know, 2,100 steps, and they'll do that at the Daytona International Speedway. So that's just one way people are, you know, remembering and with a sense of healing,
right,
and a sense of coming together once again. So I think that is that's a good exercise.
Yeah, I think so. A lot of folks, they'll do that at the Swamp as well. There are different communities in our area that are putting on, you know, special memorial services today. Marion County, very big about that sort of thing as well. I'm not sure if you have the details. We can get those for folks, though. So, yeah, a lot of activities going on around the country as we remember, you know, because while we talk about 25 years, to some people that has been a lifetime. And then you stop and think about, you know, the single parents who raised children after those years. I mean, one of the things that I found was interesting, and some of these actually can be heard at the memorial there in New York City, and that's the final phone calls that were made from planes, from the building. Again, because of communication, a lot of those folks making those last calls of their life were getting voicemail. They were getting the answering machine, if you will. And a lot of those messages weren't heard until later and after the fact when people realized what was going on. And you can still, like I said, hear those because, you know, they've preserved them so that we do remember. And you can hear the human side, the human emotion of what that was like when someone's on a plane or a building and they realize they're not going home that day and they're calling their loved one.
And yeah, and here we are 25 years later. And we are entrenched in the Middle East again.
Yeah, yeah.
Iran-backed Houthi forces seized some coastal territory. This just happened hours ago in Yemen along the Red Sea. That is going to threaten some regional shipping there, Saudi oil exports, and part of this wider ongoing conflict. I mean, 25 years later, 9/11, we were attacked by terrorists. I think a lot of Americans didn't truly get kind of that the issues that would boil up in the Middle East. Clearly, we knew that, you know, Israel had been under attack from time to time by some of its neighboring nations.
Sure.
You know, we already had our dealings with Iran because that now is 47 years or more ago.
Wow.
So we knew that, but 9/11 was, you know, it brought it home to our shores, and that really changed the dynamic. But again, 25 years, and we are still fighting a war against terrorism. And what bothers me even more about that idea is that we've got people that live in this nation who have every opportunity to live the American dream, and yet they decided that they would be more supportive of, say, Hamas than of our, you know, Jewish allies.
Well, think about the people that, unfortunately, some states have voted into office, and they are in our nation's capital, and I don't think they should be.
Maybe we didn't. Maybe we didn't do a good enough job post 9/11 to help to explain to the younger people that these terrorists want to destroy the American way of life.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, when they yell "Death to America," when they scream that, they mean it. It's not just a meaningless chant. That is what they strive for. We don't strive for, you know, death to this nation or that nation. Of course, we're fighting a war against a regime, a terrible regime, but we want to overcome that to keep them from being a threat to the rest of the world and to actually open up freedom to the millions of people that live in Iran.
Absolutely. Hey, we are coming up on 7:45. It is the Bob Rose Show. I'm Greg Cassidy. We are basically moving along this morning with a little bit of duct tape, and we're pulling a little MacGyver, but bit by bit we'll get things back to normal, so we appreciate your patience. Thanks for being a part of a very special day today as we do remember 9/11. 97.3 The Sky.
September 11th is forever in our memories. The heroes from that day remind us of the strength of America.
Each of us will remember what happened that day and to whom it happened. We'll remember the moment the news came. Some will carry memories of a face and a voice gone forever.
We're coming up on 7:49 now, 11 away from 8 o'clock. Greg Cassidy here along with, of course, Bob Rose and... Yeah, a very special day and a sad but commemorative day that obviously, Bob, we as adults of a certain age will never forget.
No, it's burned into our memories for sure. And, you know, it's one thing to kind of re-experience it, re-examine it. But, you know, I reiterate, where do we go from here? Because 25 years later, we're still fighting against terrorism. And, you know, if in the year, you know, 2026, mm-hmm. as human beings, have we not advanced to the point where we're not trying to kill each other? It just feels so like 8th century to begin yeah. with, you know, and obviously with nuclear power, several nations have enough to blow the world up 100 times over.
Right.
Thankfully, it hasn't come to that. But still, like, you know, this old-fashioned tanks and shooting at each other and shooting missiles, and it almost seems bizarre. Like, are we advancing as a human race or not?
Well, we've had that conversation when we talk about, you know, Putin and Ukraine, and that is one kind of scenario. You mentioned 8th century. Stop and think about Middle East terrorism. I mean, seriously, you've got a country like Iran where its leadership is doing the same kind of stuff they would have done 1,000 years ago. And it's like, what is your purpose? What is your intent? What is your mindset that terrorism is your daily way of life when multiple times over the years you've been offered alternatives? And, you know, we've talked about how the world does not understand our level of understanding freedom because our country was founded on that. So we grew up with it and they have not. But they are still living almost in a Stone Age mentality of terror. And what does it get them? They're not going to take over the world. They're not going to... Well, I guess maybe a little Trojan horse. They're moving into America in politics. But in the big scheme of things, what is their goal? What is their mindset? What is it they hope to accomplish by just killing random people in other countries?
Well, it's, you know, look, it's a culture. It's a cultural thing. When you're raised that, you know, these certain people, whatever religious or whatever political, they're the enemy. And they instill hate in mm-hmm. their offspring. And, you know, wherever that happens, look, we had generations of, you know, we're taught, you know, to hate, you know, to hate blacks or right. hate anybody that's different from
that's
you.
True.
And we treated them, you know, effectively that like they were subhuman.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And it's just atrocious. But again, you know, America kind of led the way in helping to repair those kinds of things and looking at humanity differently. But yet we still don't, you know, we don't have all the tools at our disposal, you know, to get the job done. And when our young people, when you see them on college campuses and how they just don't understand some of the, what I would call, you know, the fundamentals, the basic fundamentals,
right.
they start out with the idea that America's bad. We're not perfect, but when you start out with the idea that we're bad, that's going to change your whole world view, and not for the better. And it's not going to be an accurate view.
Well, stop and think about that, because this timeline is kind of going through my head. You're talking about people that are of a certain age. Some of them are in college. Some of them have been through college. That has been the message that they have gotten. It was during Obama. And if I'm being accusatory, fine. Live with it. Get over it. That was when, from the White House, we had this... you know, we're not the greatest. This is the first time I'm proud of America. That kind of garbage came from the Obamas, and that's what trickled down and filtered into our society. It filtered into the kids and the young people at that time. It filtered into our educational institutions around the country. To me, just like a lot of the BLM garbage and that kind of stuff, that unrest within our country, that's where a lot of that, I think, started, and that is where why a lot of times I think we're where we are right now.
I think the term that we fail to put out there often enough is the term American exceptionalism.
Yes.
Yeah, and Obama did that. He goes, well, every country thinks they're exceptional. Mm-hmm. Well, that may or may not be true, but when you look at world standards, we are exceptional in so many different areas, one of which is we're the babies of the world. Why are we the leaders? What are we doing differently
right.
than other people? Capitalism is one of those things. But a spiritual belief system where, you know, live and let live prevails, where forgiveness prevails, you know, love your enemy. Mm-hmm. That whole idea, that whole concept, that's one of the major reasons why we're the best in the world. And why would you ever shrink back from that? Instead, I would build upon that. Yes, Trump maybe overdoes it with hyperbole from time to time, but his basic kind of his core believes that America is truly great and that yes. we can be greater. We can always improve. That idea of American exceptionalism is very, very powerful. Again, doesn't mean we're perfect. Doesn't even mean we're necessarily better in many ways, mm-hmm. but there are things about our nation that truly are exceptional. Where can you come here and live in abject poverty, and through one generation, let alone two, you can rise through and really live what most of us call the idea of the American dream?
Absolutely. I don't think we would have thought we would get that negative message from the person who's supposed to be the commander-in-chief, the leader of America, the leader of the free world. Why would you not, when you're in that position, want to be a Ronald Reagan where it's God bless America and we are good and we feed the world and we clothe the world and we are exceptional? It lets you know that his background and his mindset and his influences were not the same as ours.
Well, I tell you what I've done about it. I boycotted eating dog. Since Obama ate dog, I'm never going to eat dog.
You got to have standards, Bob.
So, I think sorry. I have to lighten things up just a little bit because it is the 25th anniversary of 9/11.
Yes,
and we are going to have plenty of serious issues coming up. But sure. I've got to tell you something that we're going to look forward to is the Gators playing. You know, all is well when we hear the Gators and playing in the swamp. That's going to be five. That's going to be 5:30 in the swamp tomorrow. And listen, don't underestimate the enemy, Greg Campbell. Don't underestimate him. You know why?
Why is that?
Because I heard that they're good.
Sorry, so you're saying they've got it in the can.
I've been working on that for hours, Greg, hours.
Yeah, that first hour we weren't on, you were sitting there going, what can I say? I've got to have a line. There's got to be a line for the day. And that was it.
Well, we have a lot more information. We have all your top stories. And, of course, the number one thing is remembering 9/11 25 years ago today.
Absolutely. We are coming up on 7:57. It is the Bob Rose Show. I'm Greg Cassidy. And, stick with us. Appreciate your patience for our little technical issues earlier this morning and, all night long. But we appreciate it. Thanks for being a part of it. 97.3 The Sky.